All right, and we're live. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Literacy View. We have a lineup of guests with us, three researchers, all associated with A&M in Texas, A&M University. We're so excited to have Dr. Tiffany Peltier, Dr. Marianne Rice, and Dr. Casey Lambright. Let's just go over a little bit of their backgrounds. It will be in the show notes. Tiffany is a research scientist in the Collaborative for Student Growth at NWEA. And Marianne Rice is an academic researcher, educator, and reading specialist at the Department of Educational Psychology. And Casey Lambright is a research specialist with the Department of Teaching, Learning, and Culture, again, all at Texas A&M University. And we are going to be looking at two articles tonight. One is, what's the main idea? Using text structure to build comprehension. And the other article is, Inference Skills for Reading, a Meta-Analysis of Instructional Practices. We're going to start with that article first, and that one is by Marianne Rice and Kay Widjakumar. So, Marianne, I'm going to put the first question out to you, and then we'll just kind of, have a nice conversation and respond to what you have to say. So in the article, I noted that in particular, they talked a little bit about theory and practice in the meta-analysis. And I want to address the part that talks about building background knowledge. And it says here, that finally, while many have rightly highlighted the importance of background knowledge and comprehension, empirical evidence has shown that students, particularly those with comprehension difficulties, do not always correctly apply their background knowledge to making inferences. Tell us a little bit why that doesn't happen and why it's important that we really have to address something that I think people think just happens, you know, inferencing, making an inference. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's a great question about why, you know, students may or may not be able to just magically do this thing that we say is so important and we know as part of the theories around how reading comprehension works, and that what we're doing when we're reading is creating this situation model in our minds about the text that we're reading. And so in order to do that, as we keep reading, we're having to take in new information, think about how it meshes with what we've already read, and revise and make inferences about things because not everything is explicitly stated in the text. We know from some research that students, especially our struggling readers, don't all do this, even when they all have background knowledge. So one study in particular that I'm thinking of talks about how students who were taught the same background knowledge and then asked to read a story about a made-up place and a made-up context so that no one had more background knowledge than anyone else, there were still students who couldn't make inferences about this. So we know it doesn't happen for all students. We also know from this research and from other research that when students are explicitly taught inferencing, they get better at making inferences, as well as their general reading comprehension improves. So it is one more piece to say that although building background knowledge is important, that won't do everything for students. We also need to teach some comprehension strategies to help them understand how to make meaning from text. Oh, wait, you're muted, Faith.
I have to remember to do that. Sorry.
But you did it, Faith. I'm proud of you. You got it. You got this.
I know. All right, Tiffany, You're on social media quite a bit. And so I'm sure you've seen, you know, a lot of discussion about background knowledge and programs that emphasize, you know, building content knowledge, which obviously we know is certainly important. How does this meta-analysis then inform instruction using those types of programs?
Yes. So I think what Marianne said is the key, right? Like, we need to help students create this situation model. And in order to help students who have comprehension difficulties do this, to make the implicit explicit, we give them these comprehension strategies, these schema to organize everything that they're reading into. So if you think of it like, hey, some students will learn to decode on their own, but we still, it's important to teach phonics skills, right? Some students will learn how to comprehend on their own, but we still need to teach text structures and comprehension strategies and how to make inferences around these things so that they have this mental model that they then can use independently. We give them the building blocks of that metacognition so that they can apply all the knowledge that they're learning. And so it's really not, do I teach comprehension strategies or do I build background knowledge? But it's, I teach students content through comprehension strategies.
Okay. Yes. So Dr. Casey Lambright, you were part of an article, part of the research team for the article that came out a few years ago. And that's what's the main idea, using text structure to build comprehension. And you were one of some of the researchers, one of whom was part of a team, Alita Hudson, Julie Owens, Carol Moore, and again, Kay Widget Kumar was with you on this. And that article came out in April 2021. How does text structure then fit into this discussion with background knowledge, with building comprehension? What should we know about text structure and in particular, main idea?
Absolutely. So ironically, this is kind of a beautiful segue from Joan Sedita's, when she was on your podcast and talked a lot about the importance of both teaching comprehension strategies as well as increasing background knowledge for students. So through the main idea article, of course, we know that making meaning of text is the purpose of reading comprehension. And the beauty of the strategy that's mentioned in the article, we call it the knowledge acquisition transformation framework. So through this, we help students to identify the top level structure in a text, kind of looking at those discourse markers of the words that are kind of cueing or signaling the reader that maybe it's a cause and effect. Maybe there's a very explicit word-like problem in the text that kind of cues the reader to let them know how the author organized the text. From there, then once they've identified that higher order text structure, which we say cause and effect, problem solution, and comparison, knowing that sequence and description are embedded. Those are text structures, but those are typically embedded in every text we read. If we were reading a narrative text, it wouldn't make sense if it was out of sequence, right? So it's in there. Those higher order structures are the ones that help students to make those logical connections between the events in text. From there, that's that really important shift. Then we take that text structure and think, okay, it's a problem solution. So if I'm thinking about Cinderella, she definitely had a problem. The Three Little Pigs definitely had a problem. Historically, we've taught The Three Little Pigs as a sequence of events, but it doesn't really matter what happened when the person walked by with the straw and gave it to the pig. It matters they had a problem, and how did they solve it? By building a house of bricks. So from here, then we've developed a main idea very quickly using sentence stems. So students, again, it's kind of reducing that cognitive load for students where they use a sentence stem once they've identified the text structure and easily build a main idea. then we can pull in those extra details that help to build a summary, knowing that those are so closely connected. After they've built that main idea and summary, now they have those most relevant and important details in their main idea and summary, and that then helps them to answer inference questions, right? They've built that background knowledge that Marianne mentioned a lot of students don't have, but through this process, they've built the background knowledge from that text just through thinking. It just simplifies and helps students to make logical connections and then look at that, how to organize a text, right? Because we know authors are doing that when they're writing, so readers can do that when they're reading.
So this is really interesting. Judy, as I'm listening to this, I know that as a teacher, I did all these things. I mean, this to me was what we did. We really went into the passage. We wanted to make sure children understood it. We talked about main idea and always thinking about summarizing. And yet now it seems as though that's not the focus. That's almost like an afterthought. And the content and the building knowledge piece is what is thought of as the main part of comprehension, when I think from what the researchers are saying, that that's a part of it, but that's not the main part of it, that we have these strategies that we should be thinking about all the time and using them all the time. What are some of your thoughts after reading through the articles and then thinking about the schools that you've been in as far as using these strategies?
So I think, as I've spoken about in recent episodes, that right now is a very, 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 it's a trying time in literacy, right? Things are shifting. There's a hyper focus now on the gaps that we've seen in schools for a very long time nationwide. We know that there's been a really big gap in kids' decoding skills. Kids in the city and all over the United States, a high percentage of kids cannot lift the words off the page. We know that, right? Our data is showing that to us for years. But, you know, we were privileged enough. We had we spoke with Molly recently, Molly Ness, and we're going to release that recording after. And, you know, she spoke very passionately, like these ladies have, about how important the pillar of comprehension is. And many kids might not be ready to lift the words off the page on their own. And we know that that's a priority, but there are so many different ways where we can work on comprehension and give it the respect and dignity that it deserves, because it, you know, the purpose of reading is to understand, and understanding begins with even oral language, even with listening skills. And yes, of course, we want all kids in our nation to be able to also read passages and do it by themselves. I think the problem is, though, that I think for a very long time in the field, from what I saw, were many schools were using the F&P continuum, guided reading. And I think for a very long time, and I can't speak for everybody because this is my personal experience, but a lot of teachers, we thought we were doing a good job. We were just spewing a million questions. What is the setting in the story? What is the problem in the story? What happened at the beginning? What happens at the middle? What happens at the end? But I don't think there was enough attention and focus on how to actually do those things. And I think, you know, so many professional development sessions just kept honing in on what's a skill versus a strategy, rather than honing into this is how we do something. Let me show you how we do this. Let's practice together.
Yeah.
And now let's see if you can do something on your own. And if you can't read yet, that doesn't mean we ignore the pillar of comprehension. there's many ways to work with it. But I think the problem is many programs are now coming into our schools, right? Publishing companies are running into the schools. They're selling either Wit and Wisdom or Expeditionary Learning or Bookworms or Into Reading. And, you know, A, there's a learning curve for teachers, right? They're implementing something that they may have not had a lot of experience with, right? What is it called? What's that saying? Building the ship while...
What, flying, learning to fly the plane while up in the air or...
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know how well any of these programs really teach those strategies in order to attain a certain skill and do it well. I don't think that there's been enough talking about that. I mean, you guys have done your part and I can't wait to learn more. And I know Leslie Lord with the SRSD method has talked intensively how you can connect reading comprehension and also incorporate that into writing and the strategies that go hand in hand. Those are two pillars that should go hand in hand. However, what I'm seeing a lot in a lot of schools right now is that there's so much attention to learning how to lift the words and not enough attention to comprehension.
Yeah, so I wanted to stop you there. So Marianne, Judy mentioned that there are kids who might not be able to lift the words up off the page, but we still need to provide them with these strategies. But in the meta-analysis, it said that you get better results when kids are able to read independently. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, let me clarify some of that finding because it's a little tricky because this was a very broad meta-analysis. So it went from pre-K all the way up to college kids, right? We did not restrict what age we were looking at. And this was the first one that included some of those pre-K kiddos where you're doing read alouds. And we know how important we can teach these same strategies. The CAT strategy that Casey and them mentioned, they teach teachers how to do that with read alouds, right? We absolutely have to start teaching comprehension strategies before children can read any words on the page, pre-kindergarten read alouds, right? But what we found in the only grade level where we had enough in both groups was that upper elementary grade level, 3 through 5th grade, right? So at this point, kids are likely expected to lift the words off the page and read, but maybe aren't completely, not all of them can do it at the same point, right? And so we found that when instruction at that grade level, where we really had enough to look at it, had kids listening to the text, you didn't see a big bang for your buck as you did if they were reading it independently. We have some thoughts, not knowing everything about it, but one of those things is then when you look at how those kids were assessed, so where you get those effect sizes, the assessments they were asked to do, they were often asked to read independently. Whereas in pre-K, if they were read aloud to the assessment, they were read aloud and asked questions the same way they were taught. But when you do those two things differently, sometimes you get funny results like what we saw. And so it may not be that listening to the text in 3rd through 5th grade is bad. It's just that if you do it that way and then you expect them to apply it to their independent reading when they haven't practiced it that way, may not be the best measure of what you were trying to measure, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So Casey, you know, I love in the article that table that's there. And obviously in a podcast and even now, we can't really show it, but it will be in the show notes, the article. Could you talk a little bit about that table that breaks down everything for a teacher or anybody who wants to know a little bit more about main idea, that quick summary guide? Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I thought that's really important as a way to kind of scaffold this. As Judy had said before, a lot of people have not been taught how to teach reading comprehension. I know I used to use collaborative strategic reading, CSR, which obviously is connected to a lot of this, but some people only had Fontes and Pinnell and that kind of just rattling off questions and in
right.
level books. So could you talk a little bit about that table?
Yes. Are you, which table, what's the number?
Table one.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to quickly
comparison, cause and effect, problem and solution.
Yeah, oh, perfect. But I'd love to just quickly, I didn't want to interrupt when Judy was talking, but you know, our team did a really interesting textbook analysis because you mentioned several different, right? Wit and Wisdom, Into Reading. We actually did a textbook analysis to look at how many times in a textbook are students taught how to write a main idea. And what we found is actually quite unbelievable. In a full year in one textbook that we were looking at, there were main idea was the skill of the week 3 times in a school year. What's interesting is author's purpose was taught as a skill of the week 6 times in the year. So what's fascinating when we think about the overall goal of reading comprehension is to make meaning of the text. But if you don't know the main idea or what the gist of the text is, that makes that very difficult. So really interesting paper. I'd love to send it to you. It just kind of shows it was a real aha moment for me, because what we find in these professional developments that we offer is that teachers are following, for the most part, they follow the scope that they're given. So they teach on the first, let's say the first week of school, they teach main idea. And then 12 weeks later, they come back to main idea, right? We always talk about that. If I try to teach a child to tie their shoes and then I come back 12 weeks later, it's going to be difficult, right? And that's really what we see. And teachers go, oh my gosh. So we kind of call these comprehension islands, right? We're sending kids out on these islands and never making that connection between, if you can figure out the main idea, you probably know why the author wrote the book. Or if you can figure out the main idea, you probably know the theme. So I'll kind of take you through just the process. And I taught as a classroom teacher, third grade in Texas for 22 years before I joined the team at Texas A&M. And what I found, right, just like Judy mentioned, I did the best job and I thought I did a really good job. But then when I started to learn these research pieces, you know, thinking about that research to practice gap that we have where teachers are doing the best that they can in so many situations. But then finding this is a consistent strategy that is can be used every day, no matter the genre. So I'll kind of take you through that table, just thinking about we use those signal words that help to could help to identify the text structure. And interestingly, we actually find that students need to be able to infer in order to identify that's a signal word for cause and effect. So when I think about how we can help students to then identify that overall text structure, so we first ask, is there a problem in the text? Every single time after reading, was there a problem? If we say, yes, there was a problem, then we say, was the problem solved? I mean, it's just this very systematic. In every classroom I visit, in every lesson that we help students, teachers to plan, and we model for teachers, was there a problem? Yes. Was there a solution? Did something cause that problem? Then we know it's probably a cause problem solution. It's our hybrid text structure. Or we have, was there a problem? Yes. Was it solved? We don't know what caused that problem. So that's a problem and solution. If there was a problem and it wasn't solved, and this was like a huge light bulb moment for me. If there's a problem and it wasn't solved, it's cause and effect, right? Because a lot of times teachers are teaching these cause and effect for a week, problem and solution for a week, and not making the connections between problem and solution and cause and effect are very closely related. So from here, if you're kind of looking at that table one, we think about is a comparison. So if there's no problem with something being compared, and if they are being compared, then we have a sentence stem that students use every time they write a main idea. Blank and blank were compared on. And then what were the things that they were compared on? You know, we do a lot of practice with the president, 2 different presidents, alligators and crocodiles. I was just planning with a teacher the other day on a passage about alligators and crocodiles and using that to just organize the comparison so much easier. So then thinking about cause and effect, and it's very simple. If I think what happened in the text, that's the effect. What caused that to happen? There's my cause and effect. And it's very simple. The cause is, and the effect is, and they fill in those blanks. Same thing with problem and solution. So it's very consistent every day with every lesson. And what we find, or when I'm visiting classrooms now with the research study that we're doing right now, students are kind of thinking about, they know before they start to read, I'm looking for, is there a problem? And then they are already kind of cueing themselves to go, oh, I just heard a problem. That's a problem. You know, so they're engaged in the reading instead of the teacher giving them all the information. So huge difference there. And then when we think about main idea to summary, it's just adding, if it's cause and effect, I'm just going to add a detail under the cause that's relevant to the cause and a detail under the effect that's relevant to the effect. There's my summary. You know, takes all of the guesswork out of how to build that summary.
Yeah, I have to say, I always teach kids how to write a summary. That's just part of understanding what they're reading, putting it in their own words. Tiffany, this one is for you. Based on what Marianne said, I'm hearing that feedback. Based on what Marianne and Casey said, do you think, Tiffany, that school districts are asking the right questions when they choose a certain program? So they're picking these programs, and I think a lot of them are picking it based on other factors. But what we're seeing here tonight is that these are the types of questions I think school districts should be asking. For instance, how often do these types of strategies cycle through the whole year? How well are they taught? What would you suggest, Tiffany, for school districts to ask?
Yes. So I would have us back up one step and say, you know, I've heard a lot of words around background knowledge and the goal is understanding or the goal is strategies. And, you know, I think it's really easy for us to say the goal of reading comprehension is understanding what you're reading. But I think the goal of a teacher in a classroom is to build knowledge through teaching students comprehension strategies so that they can understand the text that should be a part of this comprehensive set of text meant to build knowledge, right? And so hopefully when schools are looking at materials, they're looking at it through that lens. Is this for reading comprehension? Are these materials systematically building knowledge and teaching students how to retain that knowledge, how to understand what they're reading? Not just, like you said, peppering them with questions, not just teaching strategies for the sake of strategies, but is it giving teachers a framework to do this? Right. And so just like Casey was talking about, like you can build their understanding of text structure. Like that's one piece of that puzzle. Right. If I have a structure and a schema to have everything else Velcroed onto in that story, I'm going to remember the main idea of that story and what it's about. Right. And so I think there's a bunch of cool research in this space. Another one that's a group of researchers doing research on this is called Read, Stop, Write. And I like it because it's an acronym that's like easy to remember. They read the text kind of like partner reading, paragraph shrinking, if you know that kind of framework. Mm-hmm. Then they do STOP as an acronym. So it's summarize, T, now you're going to test me and I'm going to forget, but summarize, text structure, organize, and write a paragraph. They basically use the TIDE to write. So, you know, in SRSD, they use that to write an informational. So it's just very similar to what Casey's saying, right? But the goal is to be building knowledge around this science topic or this social studies topic. So we're not, you know, getting into that war between background knowledge and comprehension strategies, but we're using one in service strategies in service of the other. And I think that's really important because there was some talk earlier on the podcast, y'all were talking about you know, the importance of, you know, students lifting the words off the page from an early age and building knowledge from an early age. Because say, Judy, we do a great job of teaching them how to lift the words off the page. They're in third grade. They can lift all the words off the page, but we haven't been building their knowledge. What happens when they get to informational text with all these terms and concepts they've never heard before, right? And so we have to be building their knowledge from kindergarten through these strategies, right? And teaching them how to think about texts in these ways so that when they get to the older grades and can read on their own, they're passing their reading comprehension test, but they're actually understanding what they're reading at that point, right? We're giving them those tools. We're closing that opportunity gap, because what could happen is schools do a really great job in phonics, and then kids get to third or fourth or fifth grade and they don't have the background knowledge they need because we haven't been building it through the use of these strategies and high quality texts. And so they still aren't understanding what they're reading. And we're like, what went wrong? We taught them to read, right?
Tiffany, can I do something?
Do it.
I think she deserves a cheers for that.
I think all three do. So I'll give that as well. Okay. So I agree with what you're saying. I think, however, the question that I have, and, you know, Judy, maybe you have some thoughts about this. When we're talking about all these different programs, I think what's missing here is that this is the core of what comprehension is all about, that transfers from whatever program you use, from one to the next. And I think in choosing the program, that's the part to me that seems to be missing or on the back burner as a secondary factor rather than a primary factor. I'm going to throw it out to all of you because that's what's on my mind, that when I read through this meta-analysis and I read through the article that Casey's involved with, where it says step one, identify the overall text structure. Step two, develop the main idea statement. Step three, expand the main idea statement into a summary. Are those three steps really at the core of every program that's being chosen? I wonder. I'm going to ask you, doesn't matter to me. Who responds?
We all started shaking our head. I'm not going to respond, but we all started shaking our head. Are those at the core of, and we're like, yes, you know, because we thought you were going to say the core of what everything it should be happening, but you said every program, right? And so that's a different story.
I think where we've maybe missed the boat, I've been on so many textbook adoption committees, and the presentation that is really well done is sometimes the textbook that is adopted without really helping those decision makers to be critical consumers. What are we looking for in a text? What are we looking for in any curriculum? That's just missing in that conversation, right? The last textbook adoption I was on, the salesperson was really great. And that's what the district went with. You know, it's just how to be a critical consumer and what really is best for kids. And that's, I think, a piece that's really missing.
Yeah, the thing I love most about the work that Casey and the team do is that because they're in so many schools in so many different districts in so many different states, is they can apply that step one, two, three that you talked about to whatever program that school has used. They know they're not going to get them to change the textbook adoption that's already been made. Millions of dollars have been invested in it. So they show them how to use that strategy with whatever textbook. And they've written lessons for all of those ones that you all talked about. They've used them all in different school districts. And so it's how do we get that piece to the teachers to say, it doesn't matter what adoption you have, if you keep this at the core and the front of teaching kids this, you can apply it to any text that you're having to use or that you have available because that's what your school district has provided or requires you to use.
So Judy, are those the conversations that you're seeing on social media? I only really see Leslie out there, Lone Ranger. And
Leslie, you know, Leslie's on the episode right now. So
hi, Leslie. Hi, Leslie. Okay.
Yeah, we have a lot of people here today. We have, this is a pretty active group. We have, so far, we're up to 120 people are with us live right now. Woohoo, keep it coming. And tell your friends. So you're asking me what I'm seeing in the field or what I'm seeing online?
I'm asking you everywhere, social media, in the field, are these the conversations?
I think, you know what, I'm gonna be honest. So I think for a very long time, there were two camps, the balanced literacy camp and the SOR camp. And now, unfortunately, I see so many people shifting and, you know, embracing structured literacy, even people who had formerly had training in balanced literacy, as did I. For 7 years I've been shifting, I see a lot more shifting. So kudos to the people that pedagogically let go of some things that were not best for children based on the research and evidence. But I'm seeing a lot of division or divisiveness, even in the SOR crowd right now. There's people, it seems like these new like frat clubs or fraternities are forming. No, knowledge is the only thing. No, no, it's not only about knowledge. It's this. It's that. And it is so ridiculous. It's like, I feel like people like to fight everything. It's like, why can't we just listen to the research, look at the evidence, and realize that we have to unite? Because the longer we continue this constant bickering, the more kids lose out. And unfortunately, kids are really struggling. It hurts me. I worked with first and second graders today for RTI and MTSS. And it is almost the end of the school year. And I'm seeing so many kids that, A, are struggling to read. And I told the kids today, I said, listen, we are going to work hard and we're going to make sure that we leave first grade readers and writers. And the kids felt this urgency. And that's the urgency that everybody has to start feeling instead of this nonsense back and forth. And people are blocking each other. What kind of a world do we live in that people can't have these rich discussions to shift the needle for kids without A, taking things personally, without B, being married to belief systems? Let go of things that are not working for kids. So and prioritize the pillar of comprehension, because I see what's happening in the field. People are struggling. Teachers are burned out. They're very overwhelmed right now. They have to plan so many lessons a day. How can we become more efficient? I know, Casey, you mentioned some really great things in your article. Where can somebody that really wants to start, you know, implementing comprehension instruction on a much better level, regardless of what program they're using, get better at it? I mean, I had at the New York City Department of Education, we were looking at the Hennessy text. It's very long. Not everybody has time to go through all these things. How can I go to sleep in an hour and a half and be more prepared to teach comprehension well tomorrow?
That's a great question. I would invite you all to visit this website. It's www.literacy.io, which has all of the studies that Dr. Wijekumar has led and ways that you can come to our online professional development. I'd love for you to come to that online professional development and use this strategy with those first graders that are struggling. I think that's the other thing, right? We have got science and social studies, but the text that you're reading in science and the text that you're reading in social studies also have a text structure, right? It's one of those real shifts when I am working to convince teachers that a lot of things that happen in science are causes and effects. A lot of things that happen in social studies, so many cause and effect events, and just it's everywhere, which again, if you can have the social studies teacher talking through the text structure, It's that we're all talking the same language, and that is where the struggle can be maybe hopefully ended. Let's end the struggle, but this strategy just is a game changer. And I wish I'd known about it when I first started teaching.
Tiffany, you were about to say something before. I think you were starting to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to, I am not going to remember exactly, but basically when you were talking about, you know, more camps being built around this, and I think part of it is we talk in these like lofty ideas and it's like, well, what does this look like in the classroom? And so I was just going to tee up Casey again to like say, can you say those three steps? Can you just like tell teachers who are listening, what were those three steps? Because I think when you hear these, you're like, that sounds simple. And really, like, this is a practice that it's easy to teach teachers. It's just this information hasn't gotten from researchers to teachers, which is why, Faith and Judy, I love that you invite the researchers here in order to translate their work. I love that.
Absolutely. And I think that's the piece, that research to practice gap, where we're kind of just missing some really important things that would change the trajectory for lots of students and teachers for that matter. In our professional development, it's amazing the teachers that go, I never knew how to teach me an idea, so I just didn't do it. Right. I would ask them a lot of questions, but then we'd move on without ever really being comfortable as the teacher instructing how to find a main idea. So, right, I'm thinking we do always pre-teach the vocabulary that students may hinder their comprehension. That's pre-taught right at the beginning of the lesson. From there, we read the text and think about how did the author organize that text, thinking, was there a problem? If there was a problem, was it solved? Okay, then we probably have a problem and solution. Was there a problem? If it wasn't solved, we might have a cause and effect. And then our other higher order structure being comparison. From there, very simply, it seems really simple, but it's amazing. Students that struggle to readers that are making great meaning of the text still don't have a way to tell what the gist of the text was, right? So these students that want to do everything to please their teacher are writing really long summaries, but it doesn't actually get to the crux of or the gist of the text. So from there, then just using the sentence stems, right? The cause is, the effect is, the problem is, the solution is. Again, seems really easy, but consistently doing that just gives students this power and confidence that's amazing to watch. Very simply from that part, we've got the main idea. We just have to add a detail to the cause and to the effect. And we've built a summary. And that's the kind of thing I say, we can build a summary in 5 minutes or less, which is things that teachers haven't experienced because of how do we teach summary? Well, in this textbook, it says it's several different ways to teach, so I'm not really sure what to do. But they're faithful to that work. However, with this strategy, like Marianne was saying, you know, it works with any text, any genre. So from there, then we can build in those inference questions after we've made logical meaning of the events in the text. Really great.
Casey, do you have any videos posted online if I went on social media?
So it's the website, www.literacy.io, where you can find testimonials of teachers that have shared how amazing this has been for their students. And we live in Texas, where state assessments are a really big deal here. And we've had teachers share, you know, they told me to try this strategy. I did it every day and all of my students passed, even the struggling readers. They had a strategy that worked no matter what they read. So really exciting things happening in so many classrooms, but of course we want to share this with all the teachers. So visit that site or email me. I'm always happy to answer any questions, or as you can tell, I kind of get on a roll when I start talking about it.
I wanted to say something.
Her email might blow up after she just offered.
That's
that
okay.
That email.
I want to share it with everyone.
Marianne, I want to get back to the meta-analysis. So could you talk a little bit about how the inference, you know, the skill of really getting to inference works. We've talked about main idea. We've talked about summarizing. Could you hone in on the inference piece? Because I know struggling students, when they don't have enough of the literal information, they can't make an inference, you know? So it has to start with getting a lot of information from what they read in order to read between the lines. And so I know how I teach it, and it really fits in very well with everything I've heard. But I'd like you to kind of really talk about the meta-analysis that you were a part of.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I'll start with, I thought I knew what inferencing was until I started working on this and with Dr. Wijekumar, and really understanding the definition of inferencing is very broad, right? It is actually very much hard to explain to teachers because it is almost everything that you do in reading, because it simply means that you're drawing conclusions, logical conclusions, you're making sense of text and having to fill in pieces that are not explicitly stated. The main idea, despite how some of us may have been taught back a long time ago that you were going to like write the main idea sentence into every text, they don't have the main idea. It's not explicitly stated. So writing a main idea is an inference because it is not in the text. You are having to put together pieces of the text to figure out what that is. The text structure, sometimes there's clue words, and that's one strategy for inferencing, is teaching students how to find clue words to help them fill in those gaps. But it's an inference. Making predictions, that's an inference. If you're asking students about a character trait, tell me something you know about this character, or how would you describe this character? That's an inference. It's not always explicitly stated in the text, right? So it's very broad. And I think that is tricky because there's so many different types of inference, if you will, although there's still some debate about how inferences should be categorized or whether they should be categorized in different ways. And so for teachers, the main thing that I think to take it is that it's broad. It's a lot of things. So your strategy instruction around inferencing also has to be broad and include a lot of things. Inferencing goes from things like inferring the meaning of a word, right? There are multiple meaning words in English. You have to be able to use context clues to figure out what that word means in this context, right? All the way up to these very, what we call elaborative inferences, which are about the theme. What was the theme or the message of this whole piece? Which again, the main idea usually is pretty connected to what that theme or message is for students. And so by starting with the pieces that Casey talked about, it really helps students then understand the important literal and what information, what text clues, what text evidence they are bringing that is the important text evidence. And then they say, oh, well, now I can make more inferences from this text. And we do a lot of modeling with that. And there are some strategies, but we've also found like a lot of what students need is a lot of practice with this, right? They need practice having teachers model how they make inferences, thinking aloud, being given time to think aloud themselves and talk through it, and then given feedback on that, right? And correcting when they're making inferences that aren't logical, or probing what text evidence are you using to make that inference. Those are all things that these studies found to be really effective.
So what I could tell you after reading all of this, I'm going to press the BS button on what I've been hearing in terms
of— Are you doing it?
I'm doing it because what I'm hearing is people think this happens like this, that, okay, you do it, kids pick it up, it happens quickly. And I just have to say that if you ever worked with a struggling reader, there is no way that you could just leave these strategies and think that, okay, you taught it and it's one and done. So here's to BS. That deserves a BS button. What do you say about that? Do you think that I'm sure some kids it could happen rather quickly, but I would think most kids need these types of strategies practiced over and over with multiple books and different genres. That's how I see it.
Yep, we looked at all that. You got to do it for different types of text, right? So narrative text, expository text, different text structures within that. You have to do it with question practice, strategy instruction. You have to model and practice these things. But the good news is they don't take a lot of time, right? If you're doing this the way Casey and them do every day with all the text that you're reading, then you can build a lot of practice in without feeling like, oh, well, now I have to do one more thing, right? These are things that you're doing to make sense of any text you're reading. So just building in a little bit, 5 minutes of time to model these things for students and have them practice these things builds that, you know, that piece that they need. And I'll share a story about my own kiddo who, one of the other things that they do a lot with the ANIM team is show teachers how to teach kids to then apply this to our state reading comprehension assessment. And I would guarantee any state assessment in whatever state you are, ask questions like, what is the best summary for this passage, right? We've all seen that question on these types of state assessments. And then it gives them four choices and they have to pick the best one. Well, my son was trying to use a strategy that he had been taught, which was, oh, a summary is beginning, middle, and end. And so he'd gone through each one of these summaries and marked there's a piece of information from the beginning, the piece from the middle, the piece from the end. And he comes to me, he's like, Mom, they're all right. They all have beginning, middle, and end. And I was like, well, bud, let's try a different strategy. And I taught him a piece of strategy and we looked back at the passage and said, this is actually a cause and effect passage about, I think it was about Condoleezza Rice or something, you know, like this was it was about her life and there is sequence in there. Something happened at the beginning of her life, the middle of her life and the end of her life, you know, like, but that's not it. It's about cause and effect. And it's about events in her life that caused her to become the person that she is today. And when I showed him that, I was like, now read those again and tell me which one's the best summary. And he could pick it out right away. Right. Because it's not about those things. And so Casey and them also do a lot of work trying to, get teachers to focus on these text structures rather than some of these other less effective strategies like beginning, middle, and end.
Well, it's that comfort, right? This is something I've done forever. It hasn't been successful, but I'm not sure what else to do. So really trying to show teachers and convince teachers that this actually makes so much more sense. And those are those contradictory strategies. There are a lot of them. There are lots of comprehension strategies. So how do we help teachers find those that are most effective and have evidence behind them? Really important piece of how do we help. So loved Marianne's story.
Thank Yay. You. Thank you. I just wanted to, and Faith, I just wanted to mention, we have a comment from David Helk. Hi, David.
He says, hi, David.
Yes. He says, yes, I agree. It's BS. So he liked that BS button. It's BS that this is an easy process. BS to anyone who worked with struggling readers. What I find the most challenging is executing the lessons with such a wide variety of skill levels. Do you guys have any tips for lesson planning for teachers? Thanks, David.
Great question. Any thoughts about lesson?
I'll add some in. So just connecting back to some of the comments made earlier about all of these different strategies, when we think about like a previous meta that looked at all, like, you know, what are all these different strategies? What's effective? It's exactly what Casey and them have in these that we're seeing in these templates, right? So it's having students make sure that they, our pre-taught vocabulary, main idea, text structures, and retelling, right? Summarizing. And so just thinking about that as, and then making sure that these are all connected back to background knowledge, making sure that this is all connected back to for the goal of building knowledge through these strategies. So when you're thinking about this, to do it with different levels of students in the same class, you want to make sure you're always doing it with grade level text. You're scaffolding this text, whether it's read aloud to the students or whether the students are reading it. But what you're doing is actually scaffolding the supports around it. So if students are at a point when they can identify the text structure by themselves, when they can write these summaries by themselves, right? Maybe they're doing this more independently and you're keeping the students in a smaller group and you're scaffolding those steps with them, right? And I'm sure Casey can expand on this, but that would be my advice if you have a bunch of different skill levels. Don't change the text. You want all students to build this rich knowledge, but change the amount of scaffold you're providing to students.
I want to just jump in. And this is where I think people are going off on a bird walk. It's not about differentiation with leveled books. The differentiation is in the scaffolding of grade level text. And that's what's being missed over here, that the Fontes and Pinnell leveled books, that was thought of as differentiation, like you're at a level B, you're at a level L, you're at a level S, whatever. But what you're saying, Tiffany, and I agree with you, is it's about the differentiation of taking that same material, the same book, the same text, and helping every child understand. And some kids need a little more support and others are able to go off on their own a bit more. Any last thoughts? I'm going to just kind of go around and ask each one of you to leave us with something that's practical. Last thoughts for our audience that you just want to make sure hits home.
And also, audience members, you could put some stuff, maybe if our guests stay on a little while, we could go through a couple more because I see them coming in.
Great, great to have some questions for you. Absolutely. Any last comments that maybe we need clarification for, anything you'd like to add? Who would like to start?
I'll just quickly say, I would love to challenge you to try this tomorrow. Introduce the vocabulary before you read. See about how can you help students to identify the text structure. It's in everything you read, no matter what you're doing tomorrow with your students. And from there, try to build that main idea. Write it on the board, work through it together. But that would be my number one suggestion. You can take this strategy back tomorrow and do that with your students. Reach out to me if I can help.
I'll just build a little bit on what Tiffany said. And that was one of the things we wrote in the meta, was that this inference strategy instruction, it likely requires a lot of individualization, which is why we didn't see a lot of, it's always effective this way in our analysis, right? That it wasn't like, oh, well, small group is more effective. Oh, this is more effective, because it depends a lot on the students that you have sitting in front of you. And just like with most things that we say, it should be based on assessment. And this doesn't need to be a formal assessment, but it's those things that we're mentioning, like, can they identify the text structure? Can they write a main idea? Like, what are they able to do right now? And what do they still need help with? And then I'm giving more support to students who still need help at different steps of this process. And so if you're not sure of those things, what your students can do, try what Casey says and really think about, how are you looking at what your students, what are they capable of doing right now, and where do they still need support?
Yep. And I will just add a plug for Casey's team at Texas A&M. And then there's other teams, like I mentioned earlier, John Strong, Read, Stop, Write. If you are at a school or you're an administrator, you're at a state level Department of Ed, if you are trying to make decisions around literacy, contact these researchers that are doing this work in classrooms, because they want to talk to you. Like, that's something I didn't realize till I was a researcher, right? Like, they want to spread their work. They want to talk to you. Don't be afraid to reach out.
Judy?
All right. I definitely have a couple. So a question that I have: what are your favorite forms of assessment for assessing comprehension? I know a lot of schools are right now using the ORF, the oral reading fluency, as one of their assessments for comprehension. So that's question one. What are some of your favorite suggestions for assessing student comprehension now that many schools have shifted away from using running records. The other question that I have is, so, or maybe it's a comment. So I see a lot of programs that are in the field right now, not only into reading. I know some people are going to say, oh, no. I see a lot of programs in the field. I work with a lot of kids right now using all types of different programs. When they're assessing comprehension, especially in the early grades, I see a lot of assessments have a lot of written text on it. Now, it doesn't really say what the teacher's supposed to do. Obviously, if you don't have a lot of kids that could read all of that, you're reading the text to them. So I know auditory comprehension might be very different than a child's reading comprehension. And then also, you guys mentioned writing, but if kids don't have that explicit practice on how to write these things, that could also be a factor in what they're producing in the written format. So how do we navigate around all these assessment pieces? Because, you know, it's a lot. I'm seeing like assessments where they're really long passages. Kids are supposed to understand all these skills that they've been taught. And some of them can't read. So now some teachers might be reading this passage once to the kids. Another teacher might be letting some kids read the passage. How do we navigate through that? And what are your favorite assessment tools?
I'm going to give a short answer. We have to think about assessment about what is our goal? What do we want to know, right? Do we want to know they can identify the text structure? Are we doing a screener to identify which kids are overall, you know, needing intervention? I think there's very different tools for very different purposes. So if I'm starting a unit on something, maybe I'm giving assessment on what they already know about that topic, what text structures they already understand, right? These are the things that I want to know as a teacher to make decisions, but that's my answer is it depends.
Anybody else?
I would say the same when it comes to reading comprehension. I don't know that there is one perfect assessment because you're right. When you're having kids read independently and then answer questions about it, you're not sure what you're assessing because so many pieces went into that. So you really do have to try to break out these smaller pieces to know which strategies my students are using when they're reading and which ones they still need help with. So, I mean, Casey and them do like, students are asked to write a main idea. Obviously, if your students are not writers yet because of their age, can they tell you a main idea about the passage, right? And so that's you, but you have to break it down into little pieces and because otherwise, if you're just doing these bigger reading comprehension, there's too many pieces to know where their struggle was.
So I just want to say, I think that when school districts are looking to choose a core program that's comprehensive, they really need to know how to ask the right questions. And they have to be able to look at what it is they feel is important for their curriculum. And, you know, you can't just depend, as Casey said, on a marketing rep or a person who doesn't have the title of marketing rep, but kind of acts like a marketing rep. And we know there are those people out there who are still pushing and steering people in a direction or away from something when really this is the focus. This should be the focus of what we should be looking at. And as Tiffany said, for the purpose of building knowledge, it's a little bit backwards here, and we need to kind of set the record straight of how to look at this. That's my last thought, because that's been really a problem I see, and there are a lot of misunderstandings, and we have people who are not in the field steering the conversation, and I think that needs to be clarified. So anything else we want to add? Do we have any questions, Judy, from anybody who's out there watching? Do you?
We have a comment. It says, Tiffany and Faith, Don't change the text. That person appreciated that you said that. Differentiate the scaffold. If you teach what is being shared here, they can reach the text. So that was a very interesting one.
Okay, so those are comments. Any questions, or we're good with that?
People seem joyful about scaffolding. No, everybody seems good tonight.
Okay, so
last chance. Put it in the chat while the ladies are here. I definitely have to say something, though. The researchers love the literacy view, and we love the researchers. We are so happy to have these conversations. I remember when we first started this podcast, we knew that there wasn't enough connection between practitioners like myself and Faith, who are still working in schools every single day. And these conversations, I think, are so powerful, more powerful than anything. And I think if we have the research shown to us teachers, that line of communication is open now. What a beautiful thing. So my last question to you guys, researchers and wonderful humans, how do we make sure that what you write in these articles and this information that you share with us gets into those classrooms?
Well, I'll say one thing that we are trying to do on our team is we know that teachers that are interested in this research piece are could be reading the reading teacher. So we're writing practitioner pieces that similar to the what's the main idea that was in the reading teacher journal, so that teachers, it's something they can take, read, and use in their classroom the next day, right? A very practical application. That's my, we're trying to take the statistics piece and those technical words that are often lost then and create these practitioner pieces that hopefully will start to shrink the gap between research to practice.
I think this article really spelled out everything so clearly, the one with main idea. And like I said, I love this table. And just to reiterate, the steps were step one, identify the overall text structure for anyone who came into this late. Step two, develop the main idea statement. And step three, expand the main idea statement into a summary. And you will find the links for the articles and the contact information for our researchers in the show notes as well. So, and just one other thing, just because somebody says it's SOR doesn't mean there's evidence behind it. You know, a lot of people are throwing around labels. We have the people here who are doing the research, and not just one study. You know, Marianne Rice was part of a meta-analysis, which means putting together multiple studies. This is not just an opinion. So I think before we start saying anything is science of reading and allowing people to push programs, we need to really understand what the evidence is showing us. So, Judy, do you want to wrap up for us?
Yep. Cheers to our researchers. Cheers to everybody who joins us on that live. We're up to 168 people. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Follow us on theliteracyview.com, our newly designed awesome website. You know where to find us. Faith's Twitter, my Twitter, the Literacy View Instagram page. Join our group and share what we're doing with your friends and write us some good comments wherever you can. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here with us and giving your time. So appreciate it. Thank you.